Hi, all. These are generally conversations between adults after the children have left the table. The language can be spicy, and the subjects can get saucy. So if you're ready, this is the Southern Fork. Unscripted kitchen chats, and also studio chats, with some of the most interesting voices in the culinary South. I'm Stephanie Burt, a food and beverage writer based in Charleston, South Carolina, who travels with her fork to write for a variety of publications, from magazines you might have on your coffee table to the website you love to visit for your favorite recipes. And I'm inviting you to come behind the scenes with me to get to know the people who make this Southern culinary landscape so special. I'm always hungry for the next bite, thirsty for that next sip, and ready for the next conversation. Let's dig in. The Southern Fork is sponsored by Duke's Mayonnaise. Duke's is the only mayo in my fridge, and this time of year, it's destined for Cherokee Purple tomato sandwiches on lightly toasted bread, cool chicken salad, and even a slather or two on corn cobs before they hit the grill. Many Southern chefs and Southern podcasters swear by Duke's, the secret to great food. This wonderful condiment was created by Eugenia Duke in Greenville, South Carolina, more than 100 years ago, and the recipe hasn't changed. Visit dukesmayo.com for more information, or easier yet, just follow my lead and add it to your grocery list to make sure that your fridge always has a jar at the ready. If you can't believe that a mayonnaise can inspire a cult-like following, then you haven't tried Duke's Mayonnaise. Now, sure, Labor Day has passed and now so has a hurricane, but it still feels like summer for a few more weeks on Sullivan's Island. And beach time and local gelato time just seem to go together. I met pastry chef Andrea Upchurch years ago when we judged a food contest together, and I knew that we were going to be friends from the beginning. She was wearing vintage shoes and little dessert earrings. But beyond my simple fashion interest, she's one of the most loved chefs in Charleston, South Carolina, inspiring classes of pastry cooks through her tenure at Cypress, Magnolia, and Blossom all downtown. And she's now leading a team to sweet success at the Obstinate Daughter and Beard Cat Sweet Shop on Sullivan's Island. It might seem that she can cruise on that candy highway since she knows her craft so well, but as a mother and a manager, she spends a lot of time thinking about how best to try and balance her professional pursuits, her team's needs, and her family's well-being, an aspect of chef life we don't often see discussed, but a juggling act that is present in many a professional kitchen. Oh, and P.S., she mentions Jacques Larson, her executive chef, frequently in this episode. And you can hear him on episode 11. Welcome to the Southern Fork, Andrea.
Hi.
Oh, I'm so glad you're here.
Glad to be here.
I bribed you, but then you've bribed me. What are these huge cat head biscuit size muffins that you brought us today?
I brought y'all some delicious blueberry lemon crumble muffins. So some North Carolina blueberries, and then we used some semolina oat crumble on the top, some fresh lemon zest on the inside too with them, because I'm kind of obsessed with citrus with all fruit.
Oh, yes. It's just a bright thing.
They go together like peas and carrots.
Good. I'm glad I ran this morning, so now I'm going to cancel that out right here.
Inside, that's what I'm here for.
Yes, that is your job. Inside the Ohm Radio studio this morning with James Frolio, who also got a blueberry lemon muffin.
Right place crumble. At the right time.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like, yay. I think the pastries are his favorite. We drink liquor sometimes, but.
At 10 a.m.
Yeah, but I know. Anyway. So you have been baking professionally how long, Andrea?
For 15 years.
Okay, so let's just come on clean here. Andrea made my birthday cake. Andrea is a lot of times my plus one. She has a wonderful palate. She's a lot of fun at dinner. So we know each other pretty well. Indeed. And then I made some quilts for our babies.
Oh, they're the best ever. Aww.
And then I interviewed you for Bake From Scratch.
That's right.
Right? So we got to know a little bit about how you got started. And you really said something in that interview. I went back and checked it out, that you were very, very happy to be part of people's lives during celebratory times. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. I think that's because I kind of went back and forth with either being a savory chef or a pastry chef. And I believe that with being a pastry chef, you are always a part of these special memories, whether it be a birthday, anniversary, or, you know, just a special holiday. Not that savory food isn't, but I feel like you always connect those memories to...
Because they're special.
Yeah,
yeah, to a birthday, a treat.
Yeah, to a birthday cake or an ice cream cone or, you know, a special pastry that someone got you. I just love that what I do, I'm able to connect with people and be there, even if I'm not really there, by helping them make those moments special in their lives.
I love that. And we've spent a lot of time over the years in the kitchens, and for the most part, that was in the Cypress kitchen.
Yes.
Shout out to Craig Deal and Bob Cook.
The most magical kitchen.
Yes. Why was it magical?
Hashtag
chef life. Let's talk about that.
Yes. As far as space, it's hard to go work somewhere else once you've been in a very, very spacious kitchen with multiple ovens and kitchens and tools. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the amount of space that I had there was, and just like a talent and whatnot.
I took a bite, so I can't be chewing on the air anymore. It's so good, though. It's
okay,
so delicious.
Thank you.
But yes, it was so much fun because I could come by and...
Yes, yes. And you can host people in that type of space much more readily also. Yeah. You have hang out here while there's still all this work going on and whatnot.
So your official title was the...
I was the executive pastry chef for all of HMGI. So that included Cypress, Magnolias, Blossom, and then Artisan Meat Share.
So all of those beautiful, delicious desserts at Blossom and Magnolias were yours as well.
Yes, yes. Indeed.
And these days...
A juggling act.
You are out on Sullivan's Island.
Yes. I'm now the executive pastry chef for The Obstinate Daughter, and then I oversee everything downstairs at Beardcat's Sweet Shop.
So we're going to talk a lot about gelato today, because for most of your career, you're really focused on these beautiful fine dining experiences. So now you've really had to kind of switch gears and do something not new. I mean, pastry chefs know how to make ice creams and gelatos. It's just part of the training. And sorbets, sorry. Mm-hmm. And granitas. I'm sorry. Yes. I could just go on and
all
on.
All those things.
All those things. But you've really had to dig in mid-career to do this new thing.
Which I thought was an exciting thing to do, you know. Once Cypress closed and we just had Magnolias and Blossom, and me and Jacques have always had a great relationship, so this opportunity presented itself at just the right time as far as my career went and the situation at Beardcats and the OD, so it kind of worked out right place at the right time to where I could transition and do something new and different and challenge myself in a different way. To develop new flavors and work with new different ingredients, but also still be creating menu items and ice creams and gelato. So it's different, but there was still creativity, consistency. The OD upstairs is very similar to what I'm used to as far as fine dining and having a dessert menu. And
beautiful composed desserts.
Yes.
And plated gorgeously.
So that was all me. An easier transition for sure. It made sense to me. This is what I do. Mm-hmm. Whereas downstairs was kind of like this new beast that I had never managed anything where they kind of gave me the wheel, like, here you go, here's your car, drive. Like, we just want you to do you and to make it delicious and beautiful and exciting and new and keep people coming. So it was is interesting to create the box, you know? Mm-hmm. So that was challenging in itself to, you know, like, not have this box to work within. Like, all right, well, it's a gelato shop, but you can do different kind of cakes. You can do different kind of pies. You can do different kind. You want to do,
because there's a takeaway element to Beard Cats on Sullivan's. There's a cold case and some little sandwiches.
Yes, we have a cold, a frozen case, where we have ready-to-go gelato cakes in a few different sizes. And then we have ice cream sandwiches. And then we also have biscuits and scones and cookies that we just have the cookie dough that you can take and bake yourself. And then we have a cold case.
Which makes that beach week beach house smell really good.
Yes, and it's so great for people on vacation because they're able to come in and grab. We do cinnamon rolls that are ready to go. And then we also have sandwiches all day, all kinds of breakfast sandwiches that we serve all day. And then we have takeaway cookies that we already have baked off. We actually do these really fun brown butter Rice Krispie treats that are loaded. Some spiced candied pecans and Benny wafers, which I kind of feel like those say Charleston to me. So yeah, it was fun to create to create a box to work within, but it was also confusing to start off with, like, where do I go?
You're learning how to batch gelato.
Yes.
In bigger ways than you're used to doing, like for fine dining.
Yes, we did small batches of ice cream for sure. Downtown, like, I was making like a 4-quart small container of ice cream and here and there, whereas here we're making, you know, gallons and gallons, if you want to compare it, of ice cream daily.
And it's local, seasonal.
So it is. We use
some of the flavors are, depends.
We have 20 different flavors, so it's kind of crazy also how many flavors we have. So we have 10 different flavors that we always have that never change, and then we have 10 different flavors that we rotate. So we have 5 rotating gelatos and then 5 rotating sorbetos. And then, yes, we're always using everything local. Our milk is from South Carolina. Our fruit is always from South Carolina, North Carolina, or within the southern region. So everything, we're, you know, very thoughtful of all our products that we put into our gelato, because if you're going to come in and purchase something that, you know is homemade and you, and taking this time, it's not worth it for us to cut corners. Like, what's the point?
Right.
So you're going to get a better experience, and we're going to be able to give you a better experience and make a better product with those kind of ingredients and just care, really, just the care that we put into it by using, you know, all the things that we get from Grow Food, like all of our local fruits. And then even when the seasons are ending, that Grow Food will stock up on frozen local stuff too. So that helps us continue over and still be using even the, like, for instance, like strawberry. So we always have strawberry, but we'll stock up on keeping local strawberries, and then we can still use them and still make a high quality local product when the season is over a little bit. So
that's great.
Yeah, so that's really special.
Well, and OD is, and Beard Cats are one of the green restaurants of greenrestaurant.com.
Yes.
So that is an interesting thing to think about too, as building all of this
Yes, and it was training, interesting to get used to. Yes, also, to get used to. Yes, we have three different trash cans. You know, we have a regular trash can, which doesn't obviously get used as much. And then we have a recycling can and then our compost can. So I swear, I think I'm still like, oh, wait, which one does this go in? Don't put it in the wrong can. Get in the right can. But it's so special because, you know, it really means a lot, and it makes a difference every day to not be using disposable ware on the regular basis, or using, if the disposable ware that we do have is eco-friendly and breaks down more quickly and in a better efficient manner. And, you know, just those little things.
You see how much you actually throw away.
Oh my gosh, it's crazy.
And when you're used to doing something green, and then you go to a place like Moe's or Qdoba, all you see, and you're a parent, I'm sure you've popped in there, then you see how much waste.
Well, and I already was like that downtown, but I was just like the fighting force behind, like, all right, no, wait, that's recycling. Don't put that in there. And one of my old bosses was very much who trained me to be that way, and you know, I'm very thankful of that. So it's nice to be able to be somewhere where it's just done throughout the whole restaurant, and everyone that's there really cares a lot about it, and it makes a difference,
especially when you're right a block or two from the ocean.
Yes.
And you can see what you're,
it's crazy.
You can see the ecosystem that you're a part of very blatantly.
Yes. Every time we go to the beach, I actually have started to try to do like a little pickup with my son whenever we're like, look, there, you know, all the time people accidentally like leave their trash or forget their trash. So we always do like a little sweep around where we sit. So it's just like, I feel like it's those little things that you show them or train them that will stick, hopefully.
and they'll
lead that same path.
We had a compost bin growing up, and or a compost pile. It was big and it was in the back. And it was just part of life. And it's important. I started one this year for the first time in a few years in my house, and it's important to me.
I think that's just part of where it is, though. But like, since you said you had it growing up, so that's, you know, I feel like that's where it makes it helpful.
Like, absolutely.
To you, it was just normal. Not, this is an out of the way inconvenience for me to help the environment, even though that should still be okay, but it makes it more normal.
It's a habit.
Yes.
It normalizes it. When
exactly.
you grow up in something like that, it's very normal. And it is all about habits. And so you learned the habit from your boss, you know, years ago. And so now it's just adding it to the next step.
Yes.
And so the people that you are working under you, and how many people do you have on the pastry?
Three.
Dessert staff.
Three.
That's great.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
so
good.
It's not too much. I've had more, so it's nice to have a nice, small, good staff.
Good.
There's not much space otherwise.
So I want to talk about something that is in the middle of this transition. I get the opportunity and I ask permission to discuss this today. on the podcast, in the middle of this really big career transition, because you'd been with HGMI for so long, you realized that you were pregnant.
Yes.
And
I knew I was pregnant before I left. So I actually, Jacques knew before a lot of other people did in my life, actually.
Because you were like, okay, I'm going to do this, but I need to let you know about this. So,
yes.
As you are learning all of this new, you're in a hot kitchen.
Oh, man. Intense.
Pretty much through most of the summer.
Yes, because Ruby was born November 10th. So Ruby June was born November 10th. I was very pregnant during all of the summer. I actually was mentally tricked because I was like, oh, she's due November. That's the fall. I'll be fine. It won't be bad. And then I was like, oh, wait, like she's born at the beginning of November. That means, you're really pregnant when it's really hot most of the summer. Good luck, ma'am.
And it's just hot.
It's just hot.
And you also, this is the time when you're crushed on Sullivan's Island.
Man.
I mean, it's beach week.
Yeah. Oh, man. The transition was whenever I had Dewey, my son, who's now 3.5, I had already been with HMGI for years. So it was like I already had a flow. I already had a very loyal, stable staff. I could do it kind of with my eyes closed to an extent, obviously. It's still a very difficult, demanding job no matter what. But to walk into something being at the beginning of a pregnancy, I was like, all right. Because I was deciding between waiting and starting after I had Ruby, but they were really excited to go ahead and get me on because it was the beginning of the season and make the transition and get it done and get things rolling and get things changing, which now I totally agree and I think was the right decision. But at that time, it was very hard.
It was very difficult. Very difficult. And, you know, you're juggling something that is personally uncomfortable.
Yes.
As well. I mean, you know, in your heart, learning a new kitchen, learning a new staff, and you're pushing yourself creatively. That's just uncomfortable. When somebody gives you the reins and says, do what you want, sometimes you're so not used to that.
Yes.
That can be very but I don't know what I want. I don't know.
I'm an indecisive person. It's a lot of times whenever I'm doing events or doing anything outside of the restaurant or doing special dinners, I always personally would rather have what are we going to pair this with?
Right.
All right, well, what wine or beer is going to be with my course? Because then I have a jumping off point.
Right.
Creatively. As opposed to just well, you just make a magical, delicious dessert. And I'm like, well, yes, I can do that. But I feel, you know, you can start and you have a place to move from if you have this, this is a citrus, hoppy, wheat ale. Okay, well, I can connect it with whatever else dessert-wise goes with this. So it was kind of like that. There was no pairing, you know?
There was no fences on that creativity. Yes. So
that was one of the things I did create. So when I first started, as far as the 20 flavors go, the gelato case, it was rotating, but it wasn't monthly. So I've started it now to where the side of the case that changes, we change it monthly. So that way we can change it with the seasons and with what fruits and vegetables, if we decide to use them, are available. And then also it keeps creativity alive, but then it also keeps consistency alive, which is very important. And I think that was a lot of what I've done down there that has been helpful for me for sure. And I think helpful in general is creating a consistency. So it's you can still be creative and make new, fun, special things that are showcasing special ingredients and local flavors. But also, we're creating this consistency to where if I'm not there for 2 days, whoever is making that gelato is going to make it the same way because we created the standard in this flavor for the whole month. And then our customers are also excited because it's consistently changing.
And they know they have their favorites.
Yes.
So back to the pregnancy thing. When you're cutting all this fruit, when you're working on flavors, what is the thing that suddenly your body was like, I need that?
I am a salty, savory person, though.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. That's right. I wanted to tell you.
Oddly enough, though, I am that pickle person. The pickles, the pregnancy pickles thing is 100% true for me. Drinking literally the juice out of the pickle jar, straight up. But, as far as sweets go, I think it's just as the same as when I'm not pregnant. It's just all the fresh fruits and flavors of the season. Peaches are my favorite and my weakness. It's probably just because I'm super Southern, but they're kind of my magical, most favorite fruit. But and then also with morning sickness, too. I feel that helps. Bright, fresh juice, flavors that can be helpful with that. So
that's good. But then Ruby's born.
Yes.
Then you've got the staff, you've got some systems, but you're now dealing with pumping in the parking lot. Talk about that.
Yes. Oh my gosh. So downtown, I had like, you know, all these like extra rooms everywhere that I could go hide in and nook around in to pump in. But on the island, I actually just go to my car and turn on the AC and pump. It's, I mean, they were all more than happy and welcome to find a space for me inside. So it wasn't like I was kicked out by any means,
right.
But I was like, I'll just go out here. This works. I actually have a van now, so I have a plug, like a normal plug in it.
You got the minivan with the plug?
Yeah, yeah. So it's, you know, totally, I'm a super unhip, you know, mom with a minivan that has a standard plug in it, so I can not have to go through a million batteries with the pump.
Yeah, but so yes, you've got your pump and the breast milk out there and rocking and rolling.
It's everyone is understanding, but it also, you always feel guilty. I mean, even though like both situations, downtown and then on Sullivan's with both groups, everyone's always been complimentary of it and totally agree with it. And, you know, it's always a joke. Like I have a little cooler that says Andrea's milk, don't drink, with an A in drink. So, you know, everyone is very considerate and kind about it, but you always feel guilty. Like, oh, man, I got to go pump again. And then if you don't pump enough, you don't get milk, and then you don't have milk for your baby. So I feel like it's just this ongoing.
And do you think that just comes from just the knowledge, that kind of soldier mentality of being in the kitchen? Why that guilt is there?
That's a good,
that inherent?
I think that's a good point. I haven't really thought about it that way, because I usually connect it with like mom guilt. You know, like you're never enough at work and you're never enough at home. Like, I feel like that's what a lot of moms that work feel like. It's like you're never enough in either place, and you're always just like, I could do more here and I could do more there, because you never, like, I'm not able to be at work as much as I used to be able to be at work before having kids, but I still put all of me there when I'm there. But then at home, you don't feel like you're there enough either. So I've always associated with that, but I feel like that's a really good point, that it probably is part of that mental connection with like, just like,
crank it out, get it
out, and being in a kitchen. And like, we don't, you know, we just don't in general, take a lot of breaks. We work really hard. We're always running around, like eating standing up and whatnot. You know, it's just the life we lead. I think that probably is a part of it. Like, oh, I shouldn't be leaving right now to do this. Like, I should be getting that next project done to help my employee, you know, get to her next step or get to her next job or whatever it might be, or just doing, even if they're done and I'm still going to pump and they're not there, like, oh, well, I probably should be detail cleaning this as opposed to like going outside and pumping. And so, yeah, but
there's a lot of internal monologue just going all the time when you're with the mom. And, you know, when you had Dewey, it was more easy, but two just seemed to weigh on you mom guilt wise
I think so.
And it was a little bit tougher to kind of come back. What does working while being a mom give you?
I think,
as a woman,
I think it gives me balance in a weird, like, but the funny thing is, you feel like you don't have balance, but it also gives you a balance too, in a different kind of way. Like, I feel fulfilled personally and creatively, and that I have those outlets still and those connections with people like you or other chefs and just line cooks and pastry cooks and friends. And
it's your it's your people, your tribe.
Yes, yes.
I hate to use that word, but we got to use it apparently. Yeah.
So, you know, it's fulfilling and all the cool things that we get to do as chefs to help other nonprofits and organizations and giving back in our own ways throughout the year. So that's special to me too, being able to still do all those things where I'm not just helping me and my family, I'm helping others too, while developing myself. And, you know, one of my main things with being a professional is cultivating new people, cultivating new pastry chefs and training my pastry cooks to work and be pastry chefs themselves, because to me, it's like, what is my purpose otherwise than helping these people that are working for me to move along to...
And you have a little disciplehood now. You are a beloved teacher in this community, and it's extended.
I do. It's very special to me.
Out of the state. Yes. Yes.
It's such a cool thing to see happen. It definitely makes me, it makes me emotional, but it's special to see, you know, your the people that you've trained.
Yeah.
You know, take those next steps.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can do it all with sugar. So
yes.
So now that you've kind of stabilized,
yes,
you've got two children, you're working hard, you've got a gelato shop that is stabilized and really growing. Well, what makes you hungry now that you've been such a badass so far here?
What makes me hungry? I mean, I think everything makes me hungry. I don't know. I eat all day. I get made fun of all the time for how much I eat. I think I make sweets so much that I don't tend to go for them as much, but
because we're eating with our senses, we're smelling it, we're looking at it. You know, it's like anybody who cooks a lot. You're not as excited about the
yes
as it is you are to serve it to others.
Nate always says, like whenever he's explaining what I do, that I see things in flavors, not ingredients, which is an interesting way to describe it. But yeah, that's kind of where I kind of go from there. But yes, as far as like what makes me hungry right now, all of our delicious pastas and pizzas, I can't keep myself away, right? All the thoughtful gnocchis, I just ate some of those the other day and they're just delicious.
Well, what's one aspect of your job that really showcases an aspect of your personality?
You know, I did an event one time with Katie Keefe, the pastry chef from McCrady's, and people always ask, what's your favorite dessert or thing to make? And she said ice cream, and I was like, that's actually, I never have thought about saying that, because I'm always just saying, like, something that's very fruit forward and crisps and cobblers, because those are like seasonal and suds. So those are like my favorites. And they, I always associate them with like my grandma and making food with my mom. But when she said that, she was saying how, you know, you can, it's this base that you can use to make any, it can be any different flavor. And that also it's, she was integrating the celebration aspect and used for a different occasion for people. And I was like, I told her, I was like, I think I'm going to steal that, because I feel like the ice cream. So that I feel like doing that, I get to make ice cream or gelato all the time and sorbetto. So I think that was one of my big jumping points and exciting things about coming out to Sullivan's.
That's great. What keeps you up at night? Mom guilt?
Yes, the balance, the never-ending, you really never are going to have the balance, I don't think.
I think it's about the pursuit of balance,
yes,
more
exactly
than the achieving of balance,
yes,
because balance
I don't think anyone, whether you're a working mom or not.
Whether your Instagram followers are 14.5K or not.
Yeah, so I think, you know, that's usually what keeps me up, but. Mm-hmm. I think as long as I feel like I'm achieving, like my kids are happy, my family's happy, work is happy, making it happen, then, you know, we're in a good place.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Don't have to say ice cream for this one. I have the ability to time travel. You didn't know that about me, but it's true.
Yeah.
I mean, I wear a lot of vintage for a reason. I buy it right off the rack in 1968. We were first connected on vintage.
Yes.
And then I can time travel. I can gather. I can ask chefs to make something very special for you, and I can cook a little. So what would be that last meal that you get to savor that if you had only one more meal to enjoy at the level that you get to enjoy it now, what would it be?
It would be my mom's chicken and dumplings. I know that's super simple and Southern, but it always just reminds me of being at home and Sunday suppers or dinners with them. And I just, it's a belly filling, delicious meal. And I think I love in general stuff that's more simple, but made with care and not a lot of ingredients. So the ingredients and the things that are made to put into it are able to shine through, which is a lot of the things that I do appreciate about the OD is a lot of recipes like that where we use, you know, special ingredients and the, you know, they're all able to shine through.
Mm-hmm. So. And does your mom do a drop dumpling or a strip dumpling?
Strips.
Oh, yes. She strips. Rolls it out.
Yeah,
and does
not
the
biscuits
strips.
Or drops, yeah. Or anything. Bob Cook does drop ones, though. He has a pretty good one, too.
Oh, Bob, are you holding out on the dumplings here? What's up with that? We need a nightly special.
He's a soup master.
Oh, that is true. I have enjoyed that. If people want to learn more about Andrea, the obstinate daughter, and
you can, Beard Cat Sweet Shop,
you can go to the southernfork.com. I'm going to have links there. Also, an adorable image of Andrea and some gorgeous pictures of gelato. If you love what you hear, Andrea, lead us out. Let's hear a couple of the flavors.
Blabbering too much. Well, one of our signature flavors that everyone always loves to try is our olive oil and sea salt. So we spin olive oil into our base. I like it with our pistachio. So I do a little bit of olive oil and sea salt with our pistachio. And then right now we have a s'mores because, you know, it's summertime. So we do a chocolate base with marshmallows and toasted graham crackers and chocolate chips folded in. Our sorbetos right now are pretty tasty. We have a raspberry pineapple.
Oh.
And then we have a peach melon. So solid flavors right now.
So, dear listeners, if sometimes you just need to hear about beautiful food when you're stuck in traffic, they're like this, like raspberry pineapple sorbet. I'm going to get some of that. Then dig into the archives. There's more than 150 different episodes, and I promise you, we talk about food in every one. Thanks so much for coming today.
Thank you.
Hello and welcome to Talking With My Mouthful. I am recording this, per usual, from my walk-in closet in Charleston, South Carolina. But as a hurricane is here, and I am still trying to get out a podcast. So I want to mention something today that isn't about the hurricane, but about a love for this area. And that is the legacy of Dottie Frank, Dorothea Bitten Frank, one of the most beloved authors here, whose novel, Sullivan's Island, really put that island on the map. She passed away this week, which seems so sudden. She had a brief illness and then passed away. And I just remember how kind and how generous she was to me when I interviewed her a few times. And I also got to go to her house for a party when she was hosting some of her readers for a Dorothea Bitten Frank weekend. It was beautiful. It was sunset on Sullivan's Island, and she was funny. She held court. She was the grand dame, and she was very likable, and she was smart. I will just always admire her, and I will admire her her ability to allow her readers to see her as an author and to get close to her. And I think that is something that a lot of authors struggle with. So to the Frank family, I am so sorry to hear about your loss.
You've been listening to The Southern Fork. I can't wait to bring you more culinary conversations, but in the meantime, I have one question. Are you gonna eat all that?